Welcome to Purdue Crop Chat, a regular podcast from Hoosier Ag Today and the Purdue University Extension Service, featuring Purdue Extension soybean specialist Dr. Sean Castile and Extension corn specialist Dr. Dan Quinn. On this episode, Dan and Sean welcome Purdue's crop pathologist Darcy Talenko to discuss disease pressure around the state, tar spot in particular.
If I look at the map now, I think we're up to 15 counties that I added some this weekend. And it all depends where you are, whether the disease risk may be inching up.
This podcast is made possible by the Indiana Corn Marketing Council and Indiana Soybean Alliance. Your Indiana corn and soybean checkoff investments are working to find new markets for your crops through international demand, new uses, and research. Learn more about the programs working on your behalf at yourcheckoff.org. Now your host for Purdue Crop Chat, Hoosier Ag Today's Eric Pfeiffer.
From the Indiana Corn and Soybean Innovation Center in West Lafayette, Eric Pfeiffer here on the Purdue Crop Chat. Thanks for joining us. And as always, joined by the stars of the show, Dan Corn Quinn. Hello, Dan.
Hey, Eric.
Soybean Sean Castile is here as well. Hello, Sean.
Hi, Eric.
And a special guest today. Let's see, is it Darcy Disease Talenko, Darcy Tar Spot Talenko? Which one did we decide on?
You probably need to go with disease because it's just not tar spot anymore.
It's not just tar spot. It's everything.
It's Darcy Dead Plants Talenko.
Dead Plants Talenko. she has this shirt on today. It says, I see dead plants. I love it. It's great.
Yep.
That's a really good logo, too, with the,
the dead corn there. It's a podcast logo with the Crop Protection Network where we talk about seeing dead plants.
Those plant pathologists kind of have a sick sense of humor.
A little morbid over there.
Yeah, but it is a corn
sixth
head.
Sense,
you know,
of humor.
I do like that the corn's dead. That's a good picture. I like that.
I was thinking on the way here, like Darcy crop pathology, it just doesn't have the same, you know, snappiness to it. So Darcy Disease Talenko is what we have to run
sure.
with.
Sure, tar spot, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I dropped the disease queen. I mean, you should be happy about
that's,
that.
Yeah, that's we don't. Fine. Yeah. There's other people who can get that royalty.
It's abbreviated DDT. Darcy Disease
Talenko. Oh, man.
Well, we are going to talk about tar spot today, but we have other things to talk about as well. But maybe we should start with just corn progress here, Dan. Mm-hmm. Where are we around the state? What are we looking at right now? We've had some rains pop up here recently. Did they help or did they hurt?
I'll keep reiterating this point. The rest of the year depends on where you are.
Yeah.
Because the state is just all over the place. I think some of the rains helped, but, you know, I think they kind of missed a lot of the areas that really need it. Northwest Indiana, I think, is hurting the most when it comes to just drought conditions. They're actually quite a bit further ahead because they planted pretty early up there, so that puts them at a little bit more of a risk where, you know, their corn is approaching pollination. I think state's about 18% silking, so we're a little bit ahead of the five-year average in terms of silking. But we have corn that's V3, V4, stuff that was replanted, stuff that was just planted a few weeks ago because of just not getting breaks from the rains when you look at the eastern, southeastern parts of the state. So stuff is just all over the place. I think the rains did help with some of the areas in central Indiana. But I think a lot of them missed kind of northwest Indiana, which is where majority of the pineapple corn is showing up, the leaf rolling. You know, good thing about that area is there is a lot of irrigation, so they can kind of account for that. But it also means that there's a lot of sandier soils, coarser texture soils, just can't hold water as well as other parts of the state. So they're really stressed. I think another issue that we're seeing is just these root systems are shallow in a lot of places. We're seeing nitrogen losses in a lot of places. I've had a few calls of, hey, my corn's approaching silking and I've got nitrogen deficiency showing up. And they reiterated that they had upwards of 10 inches of rain after that nitrogen, that side dress nitrogen application. So definitely some was lost or moved out of that rooting system. So that's been kind of a concern in some areas. But overall, stuff is all over the place. We'll see where the crop condition ratings are this week. I still think they're probably on the downhill slide across the state. It's just so variable. Depends on where you're at. I've got great corn that's R2, looking great. Got corn that's V3, V4, corn that's stressed and pollinating. It's just all over the board. So it just really depends on where you're at, and a lot of these showers have been pretty spotty depending on where you're at. And I know some, I think I saw an image on social media where this farmer, he had his home and he needed rain, and the storm system split his area. So you see that, and he completely missed him. So it's so variable right now around the state.
And as we chat here on Monday morning, we will get that crop progress update here later this afternoon. Darcy, when we think about corn, we think about tar spot. That's the big one. We'll get to some of the other ones here in a minute. But where are we with tar spot? It seems like you keep getting your crayons out and coloring in more counties as we go here. That's how you do it, right?
Yes, the crayons. If I look at the map now, I think we're up to 15 counties that I added some this weekend. And just like Dan mentioned, it all depends where you are, whether the disease risk may be inching up. So where we first found tar spot this season, it was the northwest corner. And I'm not worried about that disease because it's not progressing any further than those first little lesions that we found. And until I think we see good growing conditions, I'm not going to worry about disease. I guess that's what I look at is, where is your crop right now? Is it growing good? Are you got the yield potential going? And are you at that tassel silking R2 stages? Those are the fields that, if you're at that stage, those are the fields I would be out looking to see if you can find it. And so yes, I would say Friday when we went out, and so I turned on Randolph County, and so I was out in some really good looking corn, and I could easily find the disease at my knee level. It's still really low, but then I think, you know, the question comes into them, do they trigger? And I would have, in my mind, I would trigger. I got yield potential there, and I would trigger to put a fungicide out to protect that crop canopy.
When you said it was low, like low in the canopy or a low incidence, what do you mean by low?
Low all the way around. Okay. So we're finding it at my knee level. So those big, those open leaves at knee level. So those initial infections that I found back a month ago, those were very tiny leaves and they're gone. Those are not, that's not the infection cycle I'm worried about. I'm worried about the second infection cycle here that's coming in. And so those we're finding, that's where I'm looking. Your leaves at my knee level is where we're finding it if we have activity in the canopy. And then those leaves, I gave it about 1% incidence, so one out of 100 plants I could find it, and then the severity is less than 0.1%, so one or two spots on the leaf. I have had leaves come in, though, that people have submitted where they've had 3 or 4% on those lower leaves, so it's not moved in the upper canopy, but it is active in that lower canopy, and then if you're finding it at that level, I definitely think about, yes, we got to get a fungicide to protect that upper canopy.
So,
go ahead, Dan.
I was just going to reiterate, you know, you do a lot of looking for tar spot around the state. Where do you kind of target, or where do you look for, you know, when you enter a field, or is the edge of the field, or just kind of give folks a kind of a walkthrough of where you're looking for it, so maybe they can try and mimic some of that.
Well, first I'm going to the fields that are my hot pockets that I know I normally find it. So the fields that have had a history that we know we had severe disease in previous years. Then generally, I don't walk the 100-acre field, all of it. I'm going to stay around the edges and look where there's a tree line where it may have been cooler. But that being said, we get out and walk in and I don't spend more than 20, 25 minutes in a field to say, can I find it? Is it there? If it's that hard to find, I can wait till next week again and go back in again and find it. And then so we have these tools to help us, you know, if you're seeing it, if your county's turned on, we know I'm getting more reports. So, you know, out of the certain counties we've turned it on, I'd use that to try to scout for it. But now that's where I'm looking, knee level. That's where I'm trying to scan the canopy. And I know as the crop gets way over my head in some of these fields, it's kind of harder to not get lost.
Yeah. Well, and maybe we should take a step back here for a moment. I know that farmers who have had tar spot, they're probably very familiar with all of this and how to find it and what kind of conditions it thrives in. But for those that maybe it hasn't hit them quite yet and they've been lucky, you may not be that lucky for that long. I mean, knock on wood, you stay that way. But just talk about the conditions in which tar spot thrives, because really at this point we've talked about weather has been so different in all over the state. It's just been kind of probably more variable this year than years past that I can remember.
Yeah, so to get it started, we've done a lot of work on this weather conditions that influence the disease, and it's moderate conditions, so 70, 80 degrees, and high moisture conditions. We do need leaf wetness for those spores to germinate. We tend to get that overnight, so when I woke up this morning, we have a fog advisory here in West Lafayette. That's the moisture is there, and we're a little cooler. So I'm thinking, well, the models I know right now have been low because we were hot and dry the last 2 weeks where there was hardly any rain, and we've been really hot. The 90 degrees might slow it down. That being said, though, once it gets started in that canopy, you think about the microclimate within that canopy, and we have, you know, really good growing corn that still may have the microclimate that encourages it. So once it gets started, it'll keep going. But again, this hot, dry weather, if the corn is looking pineapple-like, I'm not worried about tar spot in those fields. I'm not even going to jump out at those fields and look at it because the disease conditions aren't there, and that's not the worry. We need water first to get that crop going. And I don't know if I answered that. But and then for those that are looking for the disease, if you haven't seen it, we've had a lot of false reports. So I've gotten a lot of insect frass, little black spots. So when I'm looking for it, it's not the shiny black color that you think it should be. It's more a brown black colorization. I also look at the lesion. It actually has like a raised center to it almost. And if you flip the leaf over, there should probably be another spot directly on the other side of that leaf. So if you flip it over and there's no spots, then that's probably not tar spot. It's probably something else. But generally, I see the lesion goes all the way through the leaf, so we can use that to try to diagnose it. And then I'll just add that our clinics are taking samples. I'm with Indiana Corn Marketing Money from the growers that we're supporting those samples. So if you send your samples in, we're not going to charge you for that. You can send me pictures or whatever, and I'll tell you yes or no. But generally, if the picture's not good, I'm going to say, hey, I need that leaf because I can't figure it out from that picture. But again, you can send samples in if you need a confirmation.
And we do thank our sponsors, the Indiana Corn Marketing Council and Indiana Soybean Alliance. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, I was just going to let Darcy kind of reiterate where some of these tools are.
Right.
You know, I've always tried to mention Crop Protection Network. I think they do an outstanding job. I use their resources and tools all the time. But Darcy, can you just kind of help people point them in the right direction? I know there's some changes this year. The TarSpotter app is discontinued, and they have a new model. Just where can people find that? Because I think it's really helpful.
Right, exactly. And I do want to reiterate the changes. So we had the TarSpotter app. That model, because of lack of funding, they can't keep the apps going. But we've moved the model over to the Crop Protection Network, so that protects some of that. But it is available. And I think it's better than the individual models for different things. So there was a Sporecaster model for white mold and soybeans as well, and the TarSpot app. Now they're all moved into what we call a crop risk tool on the Crop Protection Network. So it's almost like a one-stop shop that the growers can go to. I'd say sit at home and sit down on your computer and zoom in onto the field you want to monitor. And once you log it into that computer, those fields are as long as you don't clear your history, they'll come up and you can have those fields set every time you log in. I've done it where you can also download those locations and then I bring it up on my phone. So I have both sets on my computer and on my handheld device or whatever device, iPad or whatever you want to use. But it does have the models. So the tar spot model's in there. We actually also added a gray leaf spot model. So that one's been high risk for that. And if you're looking for that, just as a side note, gray leaf spot's out there and active too. Yeah. So you got to be watching that. And we're finding more of that in our canopies where we're looking for it. But those models are there, so you can go in and track the weather conditions for tar spot or gray leaf spot. And on the soybean side, the white mold model and there's a frog eye leaf spot model as well. So one-stop shop, you can put all your farm fields in, you can monitor it. So I look at all the packs and I look at, you know, monitoring them. It's kind of a neat tool because you can actually then ask it to pull up the weather from last year and look at what happened on your farm, and it'll go backwards and show you what happened last year on the risk for the different diseases. And then it also actually is also pulling the weather forecast. So it's looking ahead 5 days from now to see. So you can watch if the model's going down or if it's starting to trend up, just to give you an idea of those weather conditions that we know are conducive for the disease. In addition to that, the Crop Protection Network is also housing all the maps of all sorts of things, not even tar spot, but corn stunt while following the corn leaf hopper. There's all the other maps going on there. That also has those available. I have them embedded in my website as well, but there are different ways to get to them. So you got the model apps are available in the website. The maps are there. And then also there's a new tool that just came open where you could go in and send me a note that you think you're in a county and you think you've got a disease problem or something. I forget what that tool's called. I'll come back to it if I remember later. But there's another where it merges all the maps. So you can look at the state of Indiana and any report I had, whether wheat, soybean, or corn comes up, and you can go look at where we've reported on that. But you can also submit samples that way versus send it to our clinic, and that comes directly to me if it's within the state of Indiana to confirm or document that that disease or whatever problem is happening. I'm trying to think what else. Oh, and so then the other thing I want to miss on Crop Protection Network is we also have the ROI tool available with our efficacy tables. So there's a corn ROI tool that is available. So you can go in and say, hey, my field, is it high risk or low risk for disease? You can input what is the your expected yields for that field. So you can say, I want 240 corn, and the corn's at $4. What is my ROI or chance of it breaking even if I use a fungicide? So it's looking at all our university data on the chance of getting a return on using that product.
Yeah, that's I use the efficacy tables all the time because, you know, farmers always ask, hey, what should I spray? And, okay, but you can look at how well a lot of those different fungicides perform on different foliar diseases for the crops. And then, yeah, the new ROI tool can help with some of the economic aspects.
Well, that makes me think, I mean, here's a soybean guide on the side, and you talked about, oh, we got gray leaf spot out there too, and then, oh, we got tar spot, and it's like, okay, so what do I use, right? So you're going to see if you've got either disease or the risk where it's higher. I mean, so are there fungicides available that hit both of them, or is there a chance that you would say, I want to go with this fungicide because it's more tar spot field versus the one that's gray leaf spot? So you're talking about efficacy tables, so kind of getting the farmer down that road of making that choice based on what they have and what's available.
And that's what the efficacy tables can make you cross-reference it. And there is actually a new tool with the efficacy tables that you can go in and search. You can search by product or crop, and you can have it sorted and best to worst or worst to best, and look at the products and how they rate across the different diseases. So I would say, so if I'm in southern Indiana, and we haven't talked about this yet, but I'm worried about southern rust, which may be a different set of chemistries that's
it
a little bit better.
It just sounds like corn's got a whole lot of issues is what it sounds like to me. All these
such
pathogens.
Such a diva, and they've got all these issues.
Oh, right.
We haven't brought up the new problem in beans that are...
We'll get to that.
Well, that's coming. Darcy just wants job security here, so she's making sure that she's got plenty to deal with.
Well, it's just so southern rust may have some products that rate a little higher for southern rust that may not as be as high for tar spot or gray leaf spot. And so that's where they can cross-reference. Generally, most of our products will get a good to very good rating, but you can hone in and say, yeah, I want to use this product because I'm more worried about southern rust than tar spot. But that's what those efficacy tables can do, is it merges all the university data. And, you know, when I may not have good southern rust data, but I have good tar spot data, so that helps us cross-reference and determine what products are available. So again, yeah, multiple tools that are available. So you got efficacy charts and efficacy tables and ROI on corn, and then the maps, and then the models to tell us the risks. So different tools. They all may not provide 100% of, or they're not going to provide 100% of what to do, but it gives you the tools to help you make an informed decision on what you want and the next steps you may take on your farm.
When we're looking at tar spot in particular, and I go back to this because it has been the big yield robber from previous years. Have you found a particular product or particular timing? I know we're still learning a lot about this disease. It's still relatively young in around here anyway. What are we learning from that front, and what should farmers know about, you know, what product should I use? What type of product should I use? When should I use it?
Okay, so well, you have a large choice of products, I believe. You got to just make sure you have at least two modes of action, if not three, depending on the products, though they may have two or three modes of action. Generally, we don't have anything labeled with a single mode of action. So generally, you have an assortment of choices to pick on your farm and what you want to use. From our research and regional research, my optimum timing with a single application is at least wait to this VT tassel silking stage. And then and that window ranges all the way up to R3 has been my optimum timing. If I wanted to pull the trigger for a single application, that window is where I'd want to be. From our data, we've also shown that, you know, we could go at R4. It may be a little late, but there is yield potential there. If you haven't found the disease and then all of a sudden it comes in at R4 and you're still at R4, I would still pull that trigger. R5, no, but we're saying cut off at R5. If you reach dent, I wouldn't spray any more fungicide out there. If you're thinking, you know, we have guys that are thinking of two-pass programs already because they want to protect the whole season. So again, on that early side, if they decided to pull the trigger at late vegetative, then they're definitely going to need to come back in because that is not going to get us to black layer. So that's why we've been trying to push everything off. The disease is a little slow this year. Let's wait to R2, you know, VT to silking. So I want to wait to that tassel silking. Even still at that stage, if we think about our products, they probably last maybe 4 weeks, and then they're gone. And so tar spot is our one disease that is really going to show what pushes the limitations of our fungicides. I could say it's going to show how well the coverage was in the canopy, how well you covered the field, and then also it's going to show when those products have lost their activity. And so it's going to move back in. If there's green tissue to infect at the end of the season, it'll move back in. So that's where if you trigger the spray early or even at the silking stage, we may need to think about a second application 3 to 4 weeks later. And so that's the question. And then the return on investment there is where it gets a little hairier. If we haven't even, I know we can probably make a good return on investment with tar spot with a single application, but we may not always get there with that second application. And so that's the question. If we look at the numbers, like if I just run a basic number, if we can spray for $30 an acre, and I know that's the middle of the road, you can probably go both ways. At $30 an acre, you need 7.5 bushel to break even on that one fungicide spray. So if you're going to spray twice, that means you need 15 bushels to cover it. Mm-hmm. There are years where, I mean, in our plots, we can anywhere. Last year, we had about 10 bushels in northern Indiana with a fungicide application. So we would have broken even with that's a single application. But we may not have got there with the double application, depending on the cost of our fungicides. There are years where I had a 40 bushel yield loss where we documented between treated and untreated. So those trials, probably the two application got us there because that's more than enough to cover that. So that's the balancing act. And I know guys are looking at now, instead of buying the more expensive fungicides, can I make my own mixes with generics? Mm-hmm. And so we're still, that's where we're moving to ask that question across our uniform trials as we're looking at the generic side. Do they provide a similar protection as the mixes that are already out there? So that would be the question. And I guess I would go and we were trying to look at which way we would start. Would we start with a really, you know, high-end product and then come back in a generic, or would you flip-flop it? And so in my mind, I kind of want to go with something I know that works up front and then make that decision on the end, and then maybe you can come in with something a little cheaper on the other end if you just want to get a little bit more residual control before black layer.
You're listening to Purdue Crop Chat, brought to you by your Indiana Corn and Soybean Checkoff organizations. Visit yourcheckoff.org.
You know, this ROI question... For years now, when things have been pretty good, it's kind of like we're just going to plan on this at least one fungicide pass, and if we have to do another, okay. But that's just not how it is this year. The ROI question is a much bigger one with where crop prices are. Do we have folks out there that you've heard from that are just eliminating fungicide passes altogether until they absolutely have to make a decision?
Yeah, I have farmers that I work with that were getting ready to sell their high clearance sprayer because they've done check strips. You know, they've just been in areas where it's been low. So they just haven't felt like it's provided the yield benefit. So I've seen both ends of the spectrum. I'm sure Darcy has too, where, you know, they truly need it. They get big benefit out of it. But I've had multiple farmers, including some I work with, that are said, we're done spraying fungicide. We're selling our high clearance sprayer. If we see it, we'll call in a plane. So we'll go from there. So, yeah, fungicides are expensive. They are not cheap, especially the good ones. So you get, you know, $4 corn and, you know, these high input prices, it's tough. You got to be really strategic and really kind of reiterate and justify your applications out there.
I feel like in years past, it was just, it's going to pay off. Don't worry, it's going to pay off. It's just part of the program. We're good now, but this year we might be changing that
corn
a little bit.
You're not going to get there. Yeah. You brought up something about coverage, and so I always ask this, and I think you get the same question. So you brought up high clearance sprayer. You brought up the planes and drones. So where are we at on that, right? And no, she's like, Castile, what are you doing to me?
No, but this is the question.
It's every year, right? And so, I mean, there's people that have got drones of drones, right? Mm-hmm. And those are high clearance, and we got weather this week that's popping here or there. Okay, can you get in the field or not? We've got fields that you can't do jack until it, you know, dries out. And so where are you at on that?
Depends. I would say it depends.
It depends.
So, like, exactly.
Oh, here we go. She's
time
caught on
for
too.
A sponsors break.
Well, I would say, you know, we're holding off spraying today in our beans because it's a little muddy out there to get it across with our ground rig. And so that is the flexibility that the new drones are allowing guys to get into areas that may not have been protected before and can't get in always with the equipment. I'm just going to come back to, you're going to have to assess how the sprays are going out. And there is a lot of questions on how the drones, we kind of threw out some technology with the drones on the nozzles and things like that. So if you're going to go with the drones, you got to understand their coverage, right? Sure. It's not a 30, I'm going to tell you from our data, it's not a 30-foot boom width that they can spray. Yes, they can get misting out on the 30 feet, but it's what is the
nice
reality.
You actually had gray
I know,
spot,
well,
right?
But it's the, you know, what is the actual effective boom spray width. Maybe they got to slow the drone down, and I know that slows down the progress of covering more land to pay for the drones, but you know, maybe increasing volume and getting more into canopy is what's necessary, especially if we're going to target tar spot, to make sure we're getting the coverage we need. This is the one disease that's going to limit our ability to, you know, it's really going to show how well you covered it or not, and it's going to come up on images that you take later in the season of whether you stripe the field just like an airplane or anything else. If you're not driving it or using the equipment appropriately, the coverage is not going to be there, and we have a disease that'll show it to you.
So you think so? Tar spot, of the major ones you've talked about today on corn, you got tar spot, gray leaf spot, and southern rust. And so if someone's going the drone route, the tar spot's definitely one. I mean, you want coverage really good on all the diseases, pathogens, no doubt. But would you see as much of an issue on the gray leaf spot then as you would a tar spot or southern rust or anything like that?
I think you can see them, but a tar spot's the one that really, and I use it as a way to assess how is the coverage, because you can go back in and see exactly how far in the canopy was coverage, because the leaves that aren't tackled are going to have it.
Yep.
If the leaves, I mean, I have images of where the leaves were folded in our plots, and so right up the middle, I have a stripe of tar spot. It's beautiful amount of disease, because you can see how well.
I see dead plants on her shirt again. It's beautiful.
She's got excited.
But you can see where the fungicide kept it out of the leaves, whereas they're clean as a whistle, but where the coverage wasn't there, the fungicides will move into the leaf, but they're not going to move through the plant. All the ones that we're using for corn aren't going to move that systemically. But again, this is the disease you can assess. I can go out and say, oh, look at that. I got everything, you know, the disease where I have images where we had a leaf covering top leaf over the lower leaves, and you can see the striping, right? But then you can also assess, look at how much disease I would have if I hadn't put a fungicide out. It is providing the protection I need. But again, you know that this is one disease going to really limit it. You're never going to have 100% clean corn moving forward for this disease.
Before we move on to soybeans, let's talk. You do mention the other diseases out there, southern rust and gray leaf spot. What types of things are we looking at for that as far as coverage, risk? Where are we right now with those diseases?
Okay, so for gray leaf spot, if you've had a field history, I'm finding it in my continuous no-till corn, but it's out there in other places. So bottom-up disease, just like tar spot in previous years. So again, lower leaves is where we're finding it. The question is, how fast is it moving up in that canopy? Do we need to protect against that as well? Southern rust has not been confirmed here in Indiana, but we just got word last week that they found it in Kentucky. So if you look at the map there, it's right on the edge. So we don't have a border wall to stop it.
I've tried.
That didn't get approved in the most recent reconciliation package.
No. So that's what Southern Indiana, I'd be keeping an eye out for southern rust to make sure, because it's still early. So we're to the middle of July. And so I've had some early mid-July reports, and that's where it could ramp up in pockets. So again, keeping an eye out for that. Again, that's what our clinic is for. I would need that leaf sample to confirm it for the state. So we do, if you think you have it versus common rust, you need to send that sample in. So those are the three that I'd be tracking to see if I need to make a fungicide decision. I guess we did find some northern corn leaf blight here at Acre last week when my students were out scouting, so that could be active in your fields too. That would be another one that we might need to put a fungicide out if you have high risk for that. Other stuff I think is relatively clear. We've seen some physoderma, so if you look backwards, that one may be appearing if you have susceptible hybrids. But if you look backwards in time, that would have been when we had high moisture conditions and the plant was still in the whorl stages, so that's where that infection started. So I guess diseases are starting to ramp up, so a good week to bring me in.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
We planned it that way.
Yeah. Can't forget about those forgotten diseases. You know, tar spot gets all the love, but those other diseases.
All right. Well, let's take a time out here on the Crop Chat. When we come back, we can actually welcome Sean into the conversation. I'm not sure he was actually welcome before, but he was.
Hey, do you ever welcome me into a conversation?
That's very true. But we'll talk soybeans next here on the Purdue Crop Chat, presented by the Indiana Corn Marketing Council and Indiana Soybean Alliance.
I'm Matthew Chapman, and I farm in Henry County, Indiana. Indiana Soybean Alliance and Indiana Corn Marketing Council invest checkoff dollars into building demand for corn and soybeans internationally. I've seen this work firsthand, and it's been eye-opening to see the growth in these markets, which also brings dollars back to our farms. Promoting U.S. corn and soybeans and increasing global demand is critical to the success of farmers right here in Indiana.
This message is brought to you by the Indiana Soybean and Corn Checkoffs.
And we're back here on the Purdue Crop Chat from the Indiana Corn and Soybean Innovation Center. Dan Corn Quinn, Soybean Sean Castile, and Darcy Disease Talenko, Darcy Tarspot Talenko. What else do we have in soybeans now that we can call her? Is there a?
I
understand there's a new one.
Darcy, no, Darcy is my friend. I want to keep it that way.
let's talk soybeans now and where we're at. I know, we've already touched on this podcast the dreaded state fair disease, as Sean calls it, and he's about to be banned from the state fair for doing that. But we'll talk with the right people, see if we can't sneak him in. But what else is going on out there? Let's start with soybean progress. Where are we at, Sean?
Sure. It's going to go back to the same kind of thing that we heard on the corn front. We've got beans. I was getting a phone call a week and a half ago, right? The middle, early July. I still haven't planted yet, right? And so you talk about V3, V4 corn. I mean, I was getting the conversation July 8th or so. What can I do? And so there's certainly those first crop beans that haven't got anything in the field. Probably just got planted last week, maybe just emerging now to those that are R2 to R3. We've got some R3 stages out there, so first pod development. But short, right? We've got a canopy out there. We've got plants that are growing very slow through the month of June and May, for that matter. And so there's a short canopy. There's not a lot of leaf biomass there. So you think about all these things that come into whatever disease we're talking about, whether it's white mold or frog leaf spot or some of the more secondary diseases. We've got a crop that, it's not quite there in terms of a lot of biomass and disease pressure. Growth stage wise, what's traditional R3 kind of application for a lot of our foliar fungicides, it's there. But I'm like, I'm just not seeing anything that's warrants it. And then go on to the next level of those that are R3 and looking great, 12, 14 nodes and a decent amount of biomass, but no disease yet. But we've got these heavy dew, foggy mornings. So we're right on the edge of saying, okay, do we have any foliar diseases to contend with?
What are we finding out there, Darcy?
There's a little bit in the lower canopy. Yeah. So there's a little bit of Septoria brown spot popping up.
Yeah, I saw them in your fields already.
Well, that's the field we're getting ready to do our R3s in.
Yeah.
So, right now I would say the disease of soybeans are clean as a whistle. For the foliar.
You know she does this. Then in 2 weeks it's like, yeah, boom, it's gone.
For the foliar diseases out there, clean. And we'll angle off on something else in a minute. I would say we were talking about weather forecasting tools. That is, we also have the soybean set, and we have a new frog eye tool. Mm-hmm. That has been relatively low. We're going to do a model at 40%, which I would say is still low app this week in our crop canopy here at Acre. But still relatively low. Looking at the white mold model, now if you're worried about white mold, I've been getting a lot of questions on that. I would first, what was your variety you put out there? Did you put one that was more resistant? Is the canopy closed is the next question I'm asking. And then I have run the model. So even though up north in Penny, we've been droughty, we do have irrigation on my beans. When I've changed the model from non-irrigated to irrigated, my white mold risk goes red. So the risk is there if you're irrigating beans and you have closed canopy and you have a history of white mold and flowering now, so that's the question between flowering. As long as there's flowers there, that's the infection point. The risk is high in some of those areas, especially under irrigation. If you're not under irrigation and the model's low, then we've been too hot and dry for it.
So, I mean, same questions on the white mold, and I mean, it's almost a rinse and repeat, but no rinsing of 2023. I go back to 23, June of 23 is hot and dry. We had struggles, we had a small development of the canopy. I'm like, I'm not worried about white mold, not worried about white mold. And if you recall what happened in July and later, flowering occurs over, it can be as short as 2 or 3 weeks. It can be as long as 4, 6, or 8 weeks of soybeans. And in 23, I was like, oh, don't worry about it. We're going to R3. But what ended up happening, we had a lot of fields that got got white mold, got infected, probably R3, R4, because of, again, the conditions you're describing, had a good canopy, history of it, and then now there's moderate temperatures and leaf wetness. And it just hit a little bit later than I anticipated in 23. I wonder, are we setting ourselves up, or is the season setting ourselves up for the exact same kind of thing with the white mold counties?
I don't know. Can you predict if we're going to get rain and cool weather in 2 weeks? That's my question. That's the biggest problem. Like, yes. That's the biggest thing is, yes, I can't predict. I mean, the rain keeps changing on me for tomorrow, whether I got to go to Vincennes to spray or not. Right. So that's the biggest problem, is figuring out when the weather systems are moving through to change the forecast. So that's the thing I just keep an eye on. But as long as there's flower, dying flower material, and we have those microclimate conditions within the canopy, then that opens the susceptibility to white mold.
I go back to, I mean, again, that year and then how dry we are in the Northwest. I think about white mold more in the Northwest, but you can get it anywhere in the state. Mm-hmm. But Northwest is where I see a lot of it. And we're hot and dry, D1 status, 20-some percent of the state. And it's like, oh, there's no way we're not going to get it. But I'm like, boy, 2023 is just sticking in the back of my head, and those conversations come August. Hey, we got dead plants now. I was like, yeah, flowering is going to happen over a longer period, over a stressful condition. So again, for the soybean development, if we're in stressful condition, that's a plant's ability to adapt. It's going to throw off flowers and continue throwing off flowers until the conditions are better. So if it's not irrigated, wait for that rainfall event. Oh, conditions are better now. I'm going to hold on to those flowers and develop into pods. So it can stretch that out and have a more opportune time for this for that infection.
Correct. And then it's going to come back to the ROI on those products too. And as a side note, they just released a new white mold ROI tool on the Crop Protection Network that just went live last week, based on some of the data, or based on the university data looking at white mold. So it's a very timely tool, I think, to look at as well. Is it'll look at those major products that are available for white mold, and you can make that assessment if you're at high risk. So again, another tool to evaluate, because those products tend to be a little more expensive than our foliar fungicides for soybeans.
And they're different. Again, let's echo that R1, R2 application white mold fungicides
is a different one. Yep,
than
different
R3,
set.
R4 foliar protection for frog eye leaf spot or anything else.
Yep, right? They're two different sets of fungicides for the soybeans. So you have to decide, what is the risk on your farm? Is the white mold the priority? And those are the calls we're getting, is they've been hit by white mold. Should we think about going? Yep. And then whether they can sleep at night or not if the weather changes and we have the risk go up. So I guess that I would look at those tools and see, and especially if you have irrigated beans, you probably have some of the conditions out there for white mold.
Yeah. And those tools, by the way, after this podcast, we get to post it. If you visit HoosierAgToday.com, we'll make sure there's a link to all of these tools that you can visit. And we can also put a link out there for Darcy's website, IndianaFieldCropPathology.com. Is that right?
That's right, okay. I think,
So we'll make sure we have all of those links available for you as well.
Yeah, so then moving on, right? So you got the foliar disease, if you think about frog eye leaf spot. You said now there's an app, not the app, but the opportunity to say, what's the risk for that coming through? Where are you at on any incidents that you've seen of it? I mean, Septoria, you already mentioned a little bit. Right. Septoria, we normally don't think of worry about, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's out there. It's lower third of the camp. You don't even need to worry about it.
Right, yeah, we don't worry about controlling it, but it is there. I haven't seen any frog eye yet. That's a good news on that.
Yeah.
I think that we have some scouting tools that we know. So if you're out scouting for frog eye and it's susceptible, it's one out of, if you find a leaf with frog eye out of 20 feet, then maybe you need to think about a frog eye spray on one little lesion. But again, we haven't seen anything in ours, and we of course plant susceptible varieties as much as we can.
So let's have a little pathology lesson. So in terms of seeing that lesion, when did that leaf get infected then?
Probably
about 10 to 14 days ahead of that?
So 2 weeks prior probably was the infection. So that's where you need to be ahead of the game, not going out and finding 5% or more of severity on a leaf, then we missed it because we can't even see the infections that are still occurring. But it's catching those early infections to make a decision. You know, if you can find it in lower canopy, do we need to protect the rest of the canopy for the beans
So we're pretty clean right now, but again, let's look at this week that we had. We came in this morning, it was hazy, foggy, at least here locally. I'm sure the other parts of the state, and we got this chance of rain on and off through the week. To me, this seems like, okay, we don't see anything yet, but boy, I wonder if some infection's going to come this week, and
or
then
next week,
we need to go 10 days out. It's like, okay, let's make sure that one scouting trip at R3, we don't stop there.
No.
I think we need, and again, I've seen pretty decent response to an R4 application, so to say, okay, yep, I'm clean R3 this week, but I need to go back in 10 days or a week, right?
Yep, no, I'd keep on it and keep going. But so we had conducive conditions today. I'm not going to find things today, but I'm going to maybe find them next week, 10 days from now. Even just like with finding tar spot, I go back and look at what happened 3 weeks ago. That was the conducive conditions that were where this disease is popping. But again, you got to think that that's where you got to go back and forth between the weather we've had to see what we're finding in the field.
All right, anything else going on this week?
Oh, well, I'm going to warn you about red crown rot. I was actually in some fields last week where we are seeing symptoms already. The beans were at our full R2, so full flower. You can't really visually see it from the road, but there are pockets. If growers have had red crown rot or confirmed on their farm, I'd be out looking. But this is a warning that to everybody across the state that where you think you might have sudden death syndrome, SDS, in your field, I want you to check it this season because it may not be SDS, or it may not only be SDS, it might be red crown rot, and we're trying to document that in the state. So I brought Sean in some samples here to show what's going on today, and it's kind of surprising on the poor root development that's going on. The plants are ready that we've documented.
So you alluded to SDS, right? So let's kind of get this story going in terms of why are you bringing SDS in the conversation about red crown rot? And I dare say you can even bring brown stem rot into this conversation too. So what are we talking about in particular that's going to make this confusing for the windshield scouters?
Right. So they're all soil-borne pathogens that are infecting the root system. And so you have, it could be Phytophthora too. We've seen a lot of Phytophthora coming in with the flooded fields recently too as well. So there's a whole bunch of different pathogens that are going on. So SDS, generally we see that infection occurring where we had a cool, wet spring and planted early. So that's where that pushes the infection. So we had the infection, those seedlings, and then the diseases that appear till reproductive stages.
State fair disease, thank you very much.
Yep. And so red crown rot, we know that infection is also happening at the seedling stages probably. We still don't know the optimum conditions. I would say probably warmer soils is probably, if we look at where the disease was in the south for a while, but we're still trying to, we got a lot to learn about this new disease in the Midwest and how we're going to handle it. And then you said brown stem rot. Also, the infection is all happening in the seedling stages. The problem is they all turn and have similar foliar symptoms as we reach the reproductive stages. So right now, and we have had some of our plots where we've targeted SDS and inoculated, we've seen some of the bright yellow flecking occur already early. Yep. So initially some of those leaves may have yellow flecking, and then eventually those lesions are going to coalesce and you have, what would I say, leaf veins that are green and then brown dead tissue between the leaves.
Yeah, chlorosis turns to necrosis. Yep. And so all three of them can show that same symptomology of SDS, brown stem rot, and now red crown rot.
Right. They all have the same foliar symptomology. So then you can't just drive by and say, ho, there's my SDS or whatever, because we looked at it 10 years ago.
Yep.
You're going to need to get out and look. And I think it's really important because this red crown rot is pretty shocking in those fields. So the field I was in on Friday, every plant that we looked at, where we're in those pockets, and the beans are just starting to look a little different from the healthy beans. Mm-hmm. Every plant we look down, and right at the soil line was what classic red crown, but that's where we're very creative
kind of
in our name. We're creative
bright,
in naming,
brown,
right? Yeah. So a reddish brown lesion at the soil line. But we went and dug some of those plants, and there's hardly any root system left. Mm-hmm. So those beans are in another couple weeks they're going to look even worse than they're starting to today. So that's the question: what is the pathogen that's the primary pathogen going on in your field? And that's what we're trying to document right now: is get out and look and see how widespread red crown rot is. Because if you look at our map, and I forget how many counties we're at, let's just say they're around 8 to 10. I forget exactly, but they're not all in one cluster. They're throughout the state. So
it's
I suspect
not like they're coming in from Kentucky,
right? Again, or
right?
Yeah, Illinois. Illinois' map is lit up a little bit more. But I think it's more widespread than we know, and so I think it's important for guys to get out. It may not change what we can do yet in the beans, but it's important to understand what is the target pathogen that we need to implement tools
well,
for.
Well, and with that, again, right, the frustration that they all three have the same foliar symptomology. They are soil-borne, root kind of stem area. And you can probably have all three on the same plant too, right?
Exactly.
It's not just, you can't just say, I mean, I remember before red crown rot really came in, I would find plenty of fields that had SDS and brown stem rot. And never mind, brown stem rot has a second isolate, right, that can show no foliar symptomology, right? So you could have two to three of the same pathogens on the same plant.
We could even throw in charcoal rot, too.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
no, so geez.
I forgot charcoal rot, too. But that's the problem is you can have multiple pathogens, right? And you need to know that, I think, to figure out where we're going, how we're going to manage it going forward, or what is the optimum, you know, if we're looking, you know, making high variety selections or maybe even seed treatments to try to protect that. But those are things you need to do beforehand. We can't do anything now.
I do like your guys' creative ability with naming these diseases. But, you know, in particular, I think you missed the boat on white mold. It could have been mouse turd stem, right? I mean, you had right then with the sclerotia, the mouse turds there. I mean, that you really could have just...
white mold and other crops. We're going to keep it white mold. Oh, it is white and fuzzy to begin with.
Okay, all right.
Yes.
By the way, I'm sitting here thinking this whole time, sudden death, Darcy. Maybe that works.
Oh.
I don't
know. Oh.
No, that didn't work either.
No.
Well, it was worth a shot.
Still a work in progress.
So with the red crown rat, we're raising the flags to be on aware, see if it's out there, send samples in to confirm. Mm-hmm. Where are we at on management of this disease?
Well, since it's not as widespread, like, we haven't confirmed it in every county, and I don't really have it on farms.
Sure.
With Purdue Farms, we're limited on what we can do on the research side. We do have a couple on-farm sites where we're stripping in different seed treatments to look at that. My counterparts in Illinois and Kentucky both have good hot fields that they're evaluating some of the seed treatments. So that's where we're heading, is looking at seed treatments, maybe some in-furrow options.
Okay.
For that. And there are a couple products that have the 2EE label for red crown rot. For, it's not complete control, but for some pressure and suppression of the disease.
Sure.
So that's kind of where we're headed. I hope, you know, the breeding programs are starting to look at, you know, can they find resistance for them too? But we also need to know where is it? And that's the first step. Mm-hmm. And then once I get it in Tippecanoe County, then I can really start inoculating plots around Sean's research plots.
Thanks for that.
So close proximity.
That. Yeah.
All the farmers in the county are like, no, let's not do that.
Yeah. No,
yeah. And we can trust these Illinois and Kentucky people. They're all right.
Oh, yes.
I mean, we got Dan from Kentucky. So.
Right.
And Sean from Illinois.
I was waiting to see if you'd remember that one. Flying under the radar.
No, I collaborate with them. We actually got some big collaboration going on in Michigan. Marty Chilvers is mm-hmm. working on an assay. So our clinics have a better assay. Right now we have to grow it out to confirm red crown rot.
Okay.
So he's working on the assay, the PCR assay, that we could also quantify that. So nice. Then we'll have an assay for SDS and then hopefully red crown rot, and we can run those soybean roots and really determine what is the pathogen there.
And then all the pathologists are dancing. Yeah, we got all three on this one.
Yeah, I'm getting excited about it.
I see dead plants.
And they happen real fast, right? At R3, right?
Yeah.
That's your
secret. Yeah, so where are we right now? What do we need to be scouting for right this moment as folks are listening to this podcast, you know, later today or tomorrow? What do we need to get out in the field and look at from either a corn or soybean perspective?
Well, I would just look for your pockets, right, for these diseases, and get out and look at those stems and take some samples. And you may or may not need a shovel. So if it's red crown rot, I might be able to pull right out of the soil, but take a shovel and look at those stems and cut open the stems. And then if you're not sure, send us samples if something's going on. Same with the corn. Get out and look, and then if you're unsure what's going on in those lower canopy leaves, send us those leaf samples as well.
I think I go back to just taking the notes of what the weather conditions and the field conditions are fit for these diseases, right? I think about the foliar diseases that want some leaf wetness, and again, with the knowledge that we're probably 10 to 14 days after those conditions is when it's going to show up more. So it's a beautiful week for that infection. So guess what? Late next week, let's start looking on the early side to the end of July to say, okay, where are we at on either crop for that matter, in those that are in those reproductive stages. Never mind those that have got another month to get there, right?
Yeah, no.
Right.
I
so you think about. I mean, okay, let's build this infection level in those fields that are far enough advanced, and then it's like, okay, now what do we have for the second or third spread of that disease or those diseases?
Before we wrap up today, Sean, I know that we have some wheat. You're not just a soybean guy.
Yep.
You do look at wheat every once in a while.
Darcy does more than I do these days. But, yes.
But I'm just curious what we're seeing with wheat out there. We've got some coming off and maybe some double crop beans going in and some things around the state with that.
Yeah, so, I mean, there's wheat certainly, again, pulled whenever the fields that didn't get these heavy rains to get in there to get them out. Yields have been pretty fair for the most part. I think prior to the rains that we had coming in, I think one of the big things was how dry were the conditions. 2 weeks ago, I was driving around in a field that caught fire. So again, I think it's just a matter of being mindful of, okay, getting that wheat crop out in a safe fashion. We want to always be mindful of that. And then for the double crop guys that are coming in, usually I think of the southern half of Indiana and Illinois for that matter. We can double crop well into, you know, we're at the 14th of July now. Most of us had already probably been double cropping prior to that. If we're pulling off wheat now in the northern half to make that crop as a double crop, they're really hard pressed. I usually use the fall freeze date. So when is it typically freezing in the fall, like October 10th, 14th, 15th for the northern counties, and backdate 90 days. And if we're 90 days prior to that and the beans haven't been in the ground and up emerged, the likelihood of making the double crop in there is pretty low.
Anything you're seeing with wheat stuff this year? He said you're in it more than he is. I mean,
I would say so. Our research plots were relatively clean. We're going to be running grain here shortly for looking at mycotoxin contamination. I did hear a little bit come off. There were some loads rejected in southern Indiana for a little bit of grain contamination for Dawn.
Yeah.
And if you're harvesting them now, and I would be interested to hear if there's any issues coming off, but our stuff came off pretty clean. We had very little, even rust that we're moving through, we didn't have much that other pockets are even north of us with issues.
And so, again, go back to the conditions when those diseases are supposed to be coming in, right? I mean, I don't think we really have the conditions that were fit during flowering of wheat that was going to be conducive for having scab or anything else come
in. So remained relatively low. It was hard for us to even find a few scab heads in our plots. So,
well, as we do wrap up, the next time that we'll get together is at the State Fair. It's rapidly approaching. Darcy, any advice for growers at this point as we wrap up today's Purdue Crop Chat?
No, just keep an eye on things and watch all the tools that we have to go on to make those informed decisions for moving forward.
Dan?
Just reiterate the point about getting out and looking. I know it's easier said than done, especially with corn. It's a pain, but yes, I mean it. Not only does it help with, you know, making an informed fungicide decision, but I think it, you know, really reiterates, you heard a lot of talk today about knowing what diseases you have and how different fungicides may, you know, work well on some diseases than others. And, you know, you think about hybrids and genetics, you know, that's an important piece. You know, a lot of farmers don't plant just one hybrid out there. So, you know, do you have multiple hybrids? Is one hybrid doing better than the other when it comes to disease? So not only making informed fungicide, you know, decisions now with, when you think about cost and return on investment this year, but also just having an understanding of what the issues are in your farm and your environment. You know, where are your hot spots at? You know, what diseases do I deal with year in and year out? You know, what works well and what doesn't work well? You know, we always talk about the localized management of farms and the variability we're at around the state and what we have to deal with. So just understanding that impact to a T can just really help you manage it much better.
And you know, I'm a bit ignorant on this, but I mean, just flying your drone across, I mean, that's going to give you some information, but it's not going to get you this type of information that's down in the lower canopy where you're looking. So actually getting out there in the field is extremely important at this point.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I'll echo on the soybean front as we go out to scouting for the diseases. And let's go back to those that just planted in the last few weeks or last month. We also have weed control still, right? So let's make sure that we're timely on that. I've seen some pretty good outbreaks of water hemp and morning glories and things like that. So be mindful of the label, right? Most of them are going to go through R1 to R2, depending on which herbicide. So let's stay within there and keep those clean. I think that's still very important. As we go in scouting the R1, R2, R3 soybeans for the diseases, those are great opportune times to take leaf samples for nutrition as well. So if you're not seeing disease, taking the third to fourth trifoliate down to see where we're at nutritionally, this is an excellent time to kind of do the twofer, right? To say, okay, where are we at on disease pressure? Also, let's see, are we having any issues on the nutrient side, and what kind of, you know, corrective action could we do if disease is coming in 10 days? And so then we can do some level of tank mixing if need be, or just foliar feeding to fix the manganese issues or anything else. So I think there's some other opportunities as we scout.
That's going to do it for this edition of the Purdue Crop Chat. And again, the next time we're together, we're at the State Fair. So come and see us out there. Sean will be the tall one with a soybean hat on, I assume. We'll see if we can't get Dan one of those corn hats. You know which one I'm talking about?
The one in for knowledge for Nebraska?
Yeah, there we go. I mean, I think we could get him something and make sure, well, even with the corn hat, I don't know that folks will be able to see him through a crowd.
We'll give him the stilt, so it'll be like the clown walking out the stilt.
They do have a new circus thing at the State Fair this year.
All right.
So there we go.
All right.
Thank you, Darcy. Thank you for joining us. Really appreciate you joining us here in what seems like an opportune time for you to come on.
Glad to join anytime.
So that'll do it. We'll chat with you again here in a couple of weeks on the Purdue Crop Chat from Hoosier Ag Today.
This has been Purdue Crop Chat, a regular series featuring Purdue Extension's Dr. Dan Quinn and Dr. Sean Castile, made possible by the Indiana Corn and Soybean Checkoffs, the Indiana Corn Marketing Council, and the Indiana Soybean Alliance. The Checkoffs are pleased to help bring you agronomy insights from Purdue Extension. Opinions on the podcast are those of the host and guests and not those of the sponsor. Purdue Crop Chat is a service of Purdue University Extension and Hoosier Ag Today. Timely, relevant, credible.